Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 585. Science Faction, a new human ancestors and feminist condors.
New human ancestor, Bobby, Dia de los Muertos was yesterday. I could have honored somebody had you told me.
That's absolutely
that
true.
There was an ancestor that I was forgetting.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're going to be waiting up there with a chonkla to beat me savage when I die for forgetting.
And speaking of the host with a proud Mexican heritage, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my amigo, Mr. Damien Mercado. Damien, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great. I like how you didn't even bother to say, like, Roberto.
Oh, that's
or
true.
Or something. Like, you didn't bother to Latin up that name at all.
I'm Beto Timothy now.
Are you also a skater?
Oh, dear. And we have some new Patreons I want to call out. We'll do the first one, Adrian.
Actually, Bobby, hold on. We're going to get to Adrian in just a second. But as you know, I've tried really hard to get celebrities to return my calls. You know, I've been able to get Jane Goodall and Werner Herzog.
Sure.
And I'm going to be honest, it was kind of hard this week. But then I remembered, kind of like if you're not working out a muscle, it gets weaker. So I remembered that I can summon spirits from the dead.
You can summon a dead scientist. That's a totally fake thing you've done for this entire show.
Bobby, you've seen it with your own eyes. At this point, you clearly just have some sort of innate bias that you will not change your mind. But I will gladly demonstrate for you and the fans again that I do have the ability to summon a scientist from the past.
Now, for those of you guys who haven't listened long enough, this was a bit Damien used to do a long time ago where he would...
Bit?
Shake and pretend to... he has to say, like, spirits?
Spirits.
Yeah, he has to say the word spirits.
I didn't make the summoning word, Bobby.
He literally did. He has to say the word spirits over and over again, and then eventually he pretends to be somebody who he has little knowledge of, like just a very cursory Wikipedia knowledge of, that can then be called out by myself. And at the time, when I was back when we had some guest scientists, they would also take some pleasure in pointing out the follies of Damien's attempt to impersonate great people. But
literally never happened.
But Damien, it has been requested by many of our Patreons, so absolutely, let's do a surprise. Damien channels the dead scientist.
And now, Damien channels the dead scientist.
Oh, go fuck yourself.
I've been practicing all week and dipping my toe into the afterlife again. I think you're going to... we have an old friend of the show who couldn't wait to be back. He was practically waiting for me at the gates of the afterlife in purgatory.
Wow.
I think you're going to like
it. Let's do it.
Let's bring him back. All right, I've got my candles. Let me go ahead and adjust the lighting. Okay. All right, let's begin the ceremony.
He's not lowering it. He just takes off LEDs. Ghosts hate LED lighting.
It's unnatural.
All right, now.
Spirits.
This is where he says spirits, and he shakes a little. Yeah. All right. And who have we pretended to summon from an afterlife that doesn't actually exist?
Bobby, it's me, Copernicus. Don't you recognize me? Oh, it's good to be back.
For those of you guys who don't know, when Copernicus visited us a while back, he had what some might call a comical cat voice.
Listen, did you ever stop to think that maybe I visited Tex Avery and Hanna-Barbera early on and maybe influenced, like, hey, wouldn't it be fun if there was a pink cat? I discovered a heliocentric model of the universe. Excuse me, Mr. Hanna-Barbera. I think I could have a pink cat that sounds something like this.
All right, Copernicus, thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell us something nice about one of our newest Patreons, Adrian?
Yes, okay. But, and I'm glad you brought me, because let me just say, Science Faction, I'm a little disappointed. You're huge in the afterlife. You're all we listen to. Bobby, I'm like on, you are being on this podcast right now, it's like being on Carson in the 70s.
I'm happy we could make you so popular, Copernicus. Maybe you'll get heaven laid, I guess. I don't know.
You wake up getting heaven laid. That's why it's heaven. So let me just start here. You mentioned Adrian earlier. Let me just say, Adrian, there's a lot of buzz about you, especially since you started supporting the most popular program in the scientific afterlife. And let me just say, we've been looking into your life, and there's some buzz out there. As soon as you get to the afterlife, and I can tell you when that is, I'm not going to do it because it would take away some of the magic of living. But I will say this, avoid chili dogs.
He dies by chili dog.
I can't give away too much, Bobby.
Okay. All right. I don't know. Maybe that's maybe go vegan or something.
But I think you would look at that chili dog related death whenever it happens. Is that whenever you get here, it might be kind of a blessing because Socrates himself cannot wait. He's probably going to ambush you at the gates. You have to understand, he has a drinking team that he goes up against Ben Franklin every 100 years, and he was just embarrassed with his team. He needs a strong anchor for some flip cup, and he also needs somebody who can beat Sigmund Freud in a cocaine beer pong.
And you think that Adrian's the man for that?
Adrian kindly donated money to this program, but we can go into Adrian's past and see his true potential. Let me just say, this guy knows how to party.
All right, well, somebody else who knows how to party is one of our other new Patreons, Allison Bird.
Allison Bird, you are certainly, and as the kids would say, an epic individual as well, and we stan you. We stan you in the afterlife for supporting this show. But word on the street is that Rosalind Franklin can't wait to meet you at the pearly gates. Rosalind Franklin, she's taken quite a special shine to you.
Of course, one of the most famous scientists who figured out the structure of DNA using crystalline X-ray techniques and basically gave us a lot of the work that later got attributed to Francis and Crick, gave us the foundation for that work to occur.
Thank you. And I'm glad you brought up Francis Crick as well, because Rosalind Franklin's looking for a Thelma to her Louise, because she thinks you would really enjoy the trip she takes to hell, where she mansplains genetics to Francis Crick while a demon takes a cheese grater to his scrotum. She thinks like those are going to be your Tuesdays with Maury.
Dear. And by the way, Allison, this is a great story. Allison randomly started messaging me. I think she came over from Cult Podcast.
You're a married man, Mr. Timothy.
I think she came over from Cult Podcast, and she started messaging me about science, and I occasionally messaged her back, and then she sent me an article that I ended up using in last week's I Call BS. Those of you guys who don't know, we also have a Patreon episode that comes out every week called I Call BS Cover for additional science news articles, and she actually sent me that one about the tuskless elephants, the evolution of tuskless elephants, and so it's interesting how things go. You know, she came over from Cult Podcast, was just a listener, started texting back and forth, and eventually is, I guess, kind of a show contributor at this point, and Patreon as well. So, Allison, welcome to our Patreon. We're happy to have you. Thanks for supporting the show.
Yeah, we're happy to poach listeners from other podcasts whenever it happens. I just wish podcasts were bigger down on Earth, because they're really all we listen to.
I thought you had HBO Go in the afterlife. Wasn't that established?
Well, that's the thing. We only have HBO. We only like the fine cinematic storytelling that comes with an HBO Go account.
You guys are getting snotty, and you should check out Netflix. All right, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
Yeah, we're not understanding any of the Squid Game memes in heaven. What does this mean?
Oh, dear. Article number one, a new human ancestor. Kind of.
Oh, damn it. Copernicus just left. I'd like to ask if he knows my ancient ancestor.
Oh, maybe. So this is a really interesting article in Evolutionary Anthropology. That's the journal name, by the way. So the article outlines the naming of a new species, Homo bodoensis. So what new skeletons were discovered to necessitate a newly named species? Absolutely none.
Okay, but I mean, you've said on this podcast before, mm-hmm. and I kind of drift in and out.
Sure,
but
that's the drugs.
We have a ton of samples that have been collected, and they're being looked at by top men.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, they're just sitting in a lab.
Yeah.
And so is it something like that?
Oh, that's a very good question. Did they find something in a drawer? No, it's not that either. That's actually a really good point. No, it was not an already collected specimen that they went and they went, oh, we've never seen this before. What it actually is, and normally, I want to give you the background to this. Normally, I'm very against naming a new hominid species. There's only like 2 dozen of them. There's a little bit more, blah, 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 blah. But like, I'm against doing it because it's most of the time it's an attention grab. It's, hey, look, I found this thing, and it probably is easily within other species, but I'm going to call it a new one because a new species gets more attention and blah, 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 blah.
I remembered your explosive rant when Homo Macarena was that paper came out. Homo YOLO.
It's not dancing. It's just moving in sync to the music. It's different.
Yeah, but it makes old people feel fun.
So what did they do? They essentially combined some existing species and actually cut out some from other groups to create a new system. And even though I'm almost always against this type of thing, I'm actually really for it in this case because of the state of physical anthropology in the middle Pleistocene that we'll be talking about. So what were these things titled before? One was called Homo heidelbergensis, which we have talked a lot about on this show because it's the direct ancestor of Homo sapiens. At least that's what we think. Now, Homo heidelbergensis is found in Eurasia, specifically really in Central and Southern Europe. Heidelberg is from Heidelberg, Germany, where the type specimen was. But it's found around in other places too. And these are thought to be, like I said, the ancestors of Homo sapien, but also the ancestors of Denisovans and Neanderthals. It's considered like the ancestor species to all of us. It is our grandfather. We're all cousins, so to speak. Now, that species had a counterpart in Africa called Homo rhodesiensis. But for all of us taxonomists who did like the actual classical biology definitions, they were essentially indistinguishable. Really, the distance was the reason they were called different species. If you had found the type species of Homo rhodesiensis near Heidelberg, it would have been absolutely just assumed to be Homo heidelbergensis.
Has it now just been renamed Homo sudaniensis?
It's not the Sudan, you asshole. It's you're the wrong part of Africa, what you racist fuck. It's Zimbabwe.
You know what? I know what Rhodesia is.
Do you?
So I'm an old racist.
Do you?
Yeah, it's the name of a dog.
It's that Rhodesian dog Ridgeback. With that weird hair thing. So they took Homo heidelbergensis and Homo rhodesiensis, which are already essentially the same species, or at least the characteristics are close enough that they would have been considered if they weren't super far apart, rhodesiensis, you know, in the sub-Saharan Africa, heidelbergensis in Eurasia. And they took those two and put it together. And they say this is part of the type group that is what we now call Homo bodoensis. At the same time, they took some of the existing Homo heidelbergensis specimens, which we now know due to advanced genetics and protein analysis are actually early Neanderthals, we actually took those and removed them from the heidelbergensis category. So basically what they did is these paleoanthropologists grabbed most of Homo heidelbergensis skeletons, all of the Homo rhodesiensis skeletons, put them together, took some of them out of heidelbergensis, put them into Neanderthals, and went, boom, there we go. We're getting rid of heidelbergensis. We're getting rid of rhodesiensis. We have bodoensis, which, by the way, bodo after a spot in Ethiopia where a specimen was discovered in the 1970s. That was called bodoensis, but then was subsumed under heidelbergensis. So they're saying, no, bodoensis is its own thing. It is all of these skeletons. It is the direct ancestor of all human beings. So this thing that we are just not necessarily newly discovering, but newly naming is basically the parent species to Homo sapien, to Neanderthals, and to Denisovans, at least, if not other hominids, other hominids as well. So really, really interesting. This is really more of just a taxonomic classification difference that's based on both modern analysis of the bones. Keep in mind, early analysis, when these names were given out, heidelbergensis, rhodesiensis, these names were done at a time where you would just like look at bones and measure them with rulers. Now we use laser scanners and 3D printers and shit, and we can do way better, more exact work and tell when things are closer together. Pair that with modern day genetics and additional finds, and I think this actually really, really makes sense. I think this is a great change in classification typology, even though there are problems when you change classifications like this, because basically it makes all previous publications that use these terms essentially antiquated or unusable. It makes it hard to translate into the future. It's a big deal. It's like just changing a name isn't super easy or as easy as you might think it is, especially when you think of like the birth of scientific writing that comes before now up to this point.
Because you have to kill every member of the opposition.
Yes.
As well. And that's legally tricky.
Yes, that is the Darwinian way of winning an argument.
Ever since science adopted a red wedding philosophy,
yes.
It's been, I will say, a lot less controversies in the sciences.
So very, very cool. This will change kind of the way we talk about it, but I actually think it will simplify it. Because if you've listened to the show enough, I'll mention heidelbergensis and I'll occasionally throw it out there. I'll be like, you know, heidelbergensis or rhodesiensis, as we call it in Africa. It's like, why do we have that separation? It's not even supposed to be there. And the stuff we know now is not heidelbergensis, is actually early Neanderthals. They shouldn't be in there either. This is a logical and reasonable reclassification that I think will actually help push human paleoanthropology forward, even though it will cause issues with name classifications for publications before now and stuff. And frankly, I hope it gets adopted.
Okay, so Homo heidelbergensis, then after that came Homo erectus?
No, reverse. Homo erectus, then heidelbergensis,
Okay, explain this to me like I'm Pokemon. What am I getting or losing as I move up and down as I get closer to Damianmon, the Pokemon?
Well, then let's start. What? You would start back with Homo habilis, which is the first that we call in the Homo genus. Now, you get a bigger brain with them over the last Australopithecine. The last Australopithecine before him was one called Australopithecus garhi, which, by the way, we do think used tools. So Homo habilis, despite the name, was not the first tool man or the first tool maker. But Homo habilis gets a slightly bigger brain, some changes to the skull morphology, again, more articulated hands and a few other things. Then it gets to Homo erectus. Now, the difference between habilis and erectus is fairly easy because there's a huge gain in size. Like up until then, the Australopithecines we're talking about and Homo habilis we're talking about something that's like 4.5 feet tall, maybe even a little shorter. And then erectus shoots up, and subcranial morphology for erectus is essentially identical to us. So below the neck, they have almost the exact same body. It's indistinguishable. So you go from a 4.5 foot thing to a 6+ foot thing.
So a hominid that lifts, bro.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, actually, these are very like thin runners. Like they're very lithe and like they're the opposite of like a thick built Neanderthal. They're running around chasing food down. But that's erectus. And erectus brain also goes up from habilis. You know, it gets incrementally better. But realistically, like their brains are not huge. They're like halfway between us and chimps. And their brain just keeps getting bigger, and they get bigger and better tools.
They're chugging ivermectin.
Yeah, we get up to what we used to call Heidelbergensis, now Bodoensis. When we get up there, again, you know, brains get way bigger, tools get bigger, and then you get to Homo sapiens. And by the way, not the biggest brains. The biggest brains still go to Neanderthals as in terms of actual size. But our brains get bigger. We evolve a little bit better toleration of running around. And most of the stuff at some point, at least we think, after about 300 some odd thousand years ago, most of the stuff is probably software upgrades more than hardware upgrades. You know what I mean? Like, it's not necessarily that your brain is better, though in some cases, like the FOXP genes for language, we think that came later. So some language stuff will be way better in Homo sapiens, and some brain stuff will be. But in reality, you know, if you and I were raised in the wild by a chimp, we wouldn't be all that different. Like, it's like language and society and culture and education that makes us different. And so a lot of the stuff that, you know, starts to separate us from animals stops being like biological in the Heidelbergensis to Homo sapien transition and starts being like just the cultural stuff we pass on to one another.
Yeah, I imagine the human chimp Tarzan that you've created would live a far more horrifying life. He'd be a lot more like Reek.
Yeah.
To use Game of Thrones again, he'd be a lot more like Reek.
Yeah. Yeah. The sexual assault wouldn't be nice either. So
please don't remove my testicles again today. I only have one left.
So are there other examples of hominids that that need similar reclassification? In my opinion, yeah, there actually is. I talked about erectus and habilis and how there was a difference in size that makes it really easy because of subcranial morphology. But in fact, in some areas like Dmanisi, Georgia at 1.9 million years ago, there's a variation in erectus skeletons that is so big that if you would have found some of these skeletons in Africa and farther apart, they would have called some of them Homo habilis. And so I do think there might be room for some reclassification along the erectus habilis divide. And then there are things like Dragon Man, which we talked about a few weeks ago, which is, you know, they renamed it a new species and everything like that. And it's absolutely just a Denisovan. But like, it's the opposite problem. They gave it a new species and it shouldn't be one.
Now, was there the level of genetic variation in Homo habilis, Homo erectus, and all this? Is there, like, could you stumble upon the Homo habilis Shaquille O'Neal and the Homo habilis Vern Troyer? And when a proper scientist...
Well, no, that's it. So we've actually talked about this before. You know, you learned this in physical anthropology. Like, just because there's variation doesn't mean you're looking at different subtypes. Look around the room. Like, look around the classroom you're in. In any classroom you're in, there'll be somebody who's 5 feet tall and somebody who's 6'5". And would you be considered different species?
Gotcha.
Oh, but also, we don't have any genetics for anything that old. Some of our oldest, you know, human genetic stuff is at like 400 plus K. I think we're looking at some stuff that might come out to 7, but right now we would not be looking all the way back into things like Homo habilis, which is, you know, like 2 million years ago, up to one point something. And we would not be looking at Homo erectus, likely, at least until the very later Homo erectus, much later. So
now, was Homo habilis, were they more scavengers versus Homo erectus, who was probably more top of
the... We think all hominids were actually really good scavengers, like apex scavengers, because we could follow around a predator and then chuck rocks at him and steal his shit. So like all of us definitely did that.
So when you see a homeless guy throwing rocks at a car, he is simply doing what nature is telling him to do. It's hardwired into his DNA.
And back on to, like, do we need more species? Like, one of the things that I think personally is the amount of genetic variation that we've seen among Denisovans based on, you know, if they're Central Eurasian Denisovans or Island Southeast Asian Denisovans is big enough that they should be two separate species as well. So we got some species shaken up to do in paleoanthropology, but honestly, a lot, as we get better with classifying things, both finding more fossils and, you know, doing genetics for the stuff that's new enough, doing morphology for the stuff that's older than that, using 3D scanners and stuff, a lot of this stuff I think is going to be cleared up, but it's very cool to kind of live through the period where it finally does. And just remember, it's hard to draw the idea of a species, especially in this context. We've talked on this show a dozen times about how there isn't actually a cohesive species concept that makes sense. The one you get taught in high school, a lie, frankly, being able to breed with other animals and create viable offspring. Not only is that not the definition of a species, it couldn't be. It would exclude the vast majority of living organisms on Earth, since there's a lot of asexual reproduction, so that wouldn't work. And then there's ring species, so that wouldn't work. And then are infertile members of a species not part of that species? So that doesn't work. And oh, by the way, some hybrids, like some mules, like 0.5% of mules are actually virile. So then now horses and donkeys are the same species. Like, it doesn't work, unfortunately. And so it's really hard to speciate things in the past where they're not even connected through time. You know, what is the relation between these two hominids that are a million years apart? Who the fuck knows, to be honest? We can kind of see different morphological advances from one to the other, but we're not necessarily able to see who mated with who until we get on the genetic level, which for some of this stuff, just especially because it's, you know, hotter in tropical areas, it just ain't going to happen.
Do you think the reason that they have high school answer to the biological definition of species is the same reason that, like, your parents just say, because I said so, stop asking fucking questions?
Yeah, I think that might be it. I think at some point, like, they came up with that idea, they were all high, and they's like, what if it's just when you fuck something and then your kid can fuck something too? And you're like, all right, that makes sense. And then, like, somebody started going like, well, what about asexual reproduction? And then somebody else is like, well, what about these ring species and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, just shut the fuck up.
Can't study the mating habits of the fucking giraffe if we can't get past this goddamn debate. Just shut the fuck up.
Article number 2, condor women be acting like self-sufficient zombies at the mall.
let me tell you something. A self-sufficient, proud condor zombie woman don't need no man. Tell you that right now.
First of all, stop stealing lyrics from Door songs, Damien. Passing them off as words of wisdom.
Jim Morrison was wise. Like, of all the artists you picked, the fucking Doors. Like, I would have said that was a Beyonce thing.
That's ridiculous. So a California condor gave birth to chicks with no father. Pretty crazy.
I read the article, Head. Why do you think I was speaking up? Why do you think I played that interview with that condor, that zombie condor?
So this story comes from a place that happens to be within half a mile of each of us right now, Damien, the San Diego Zoo.
Yes.
And they have a captive condor breeding program, necessitated in part, as we've discussed on this show before, by Johnny Cash, the man who single-handedly wiped out half the living California condors on Earth.
Should I summon him next time? I know he's not a scientific figure.
I don't feel like sharing a mic with him, to be honest.
Oh, what are you saying, Bobby? If it wasn't for me, we wouldn't have learned a ton. Like, I had to do something. We had to learn something about conservation, Bobby. And I had to burn down and sacrifice those condors for the good of man.
It sounds like when you're doing...
I'm the man in black.
When you're doing Johnny Cash, you're like halfway doing Mr. Ed.
Bobby, you can't hear it, but I'm knocking twice on the ground to say I agree.
Hey, next time I'm going to give you carrots, Johnny. Yeah, well, so Johnny Cash, fucking pumped out of his mind on H, driving. He overheats his truck. He was probably in, like, second gear going 60. I don't know. He's a fucking idiot. So he's high on heroin. He overheats his truck, pulls it to the side, starts a small fire, decides it's not his problem. He's just going to go fishing. That fire ends up burning down the Padres National Forest and killing 48 of 100 living condors. By the way, every once in a while, I'll say this. And then somebody will be like, hey, man, I looked it up. He didn't actually kill those condors. They just disappeared after the fire and were never seen again.
He ransomed them?
No, it's like, they're like, well, they could have flown away. And I was like, yeah, but there was 98 condors on Earth. You think we just, like, wrote one off? Like, you think all of a sudden somebody's like, wow, there's a California condor here. Well, that's not anything to write to a biologist about. Like, we would know if there was a secret colony of fucking condors living somewhere, you fucking assholes. He killed them.
The fact that he couldn't make the leap that you, like, one man starts a fire. That fire then kills a bunch of birds. Yeah. Too. Like, that tells me in his mind, he's like, oh, yeah, well, clearly he lit the fire, then shot the birds as they were fleeing. Like, if he didn't do that, then
no,
he didn't
well, they
kill
were
the
like,
birds.
Well, it just destroyed their living area. It didn't necessarily kill them. And it's like, yeah, okay, fine. That makes sense if 5 years later we find, like, a group of condors nesting a few miles away in an unburnt area. Otherwise, shut the fuck up and kill them.
Listen, I lost my house in a fire once, and I just simply moved. I don't understand the problem.
I did cause the fire.
Oh, Bobby, I don't care about no damn buzzards. Which is something he said.
That was his quote. He was the first person ever to be fined in the United States for damaging natural resources, and that was his exact quote. So anyway, these condors gave birth with no father.
Sounds like me and these condors could bond over something, not knowing their dads. I'm just kidding. I know my dad. It's just, I wish I did.
So this is the first ever documented virgin birth in a wild bird. And it's really, really interesting. Let me tell you the backstory, because how they found out is kind of interesting, too. This is a breeding program. So they have female condors in there with male condors. And at one point, the female condor laid some eggs and they hatched. And nobody thought shit about it because they're like, well, there's a male condor in there. They were trying to get them to breed. They bred. Fantastic. But because there's so few of them. By the way, no longer 98, as was the case when Johnny Cash was around. The numbers are now 504 on Earth. About 330 of them are in the wild. But we have the genetic profile of every single one of those 504 California condors, and researchers check that out, and then they compare it to all the known condors to see who they should link up in the breeding program to try and keep a lot of genetic diversity. So if you only got a few shots to breed some condor eggs, you don't want to find out that the ones you're trying to breed are first cousins, right? So they look through all the data to try and figure out which ones would be best for breeding. And in doing so, they realized that two of the condors, which, by the way, at this point, they had already let go. They're breeding them and then releasing them in the wild. So they had already let these go. But they came across two males who didn't have a known father, meaning when they looked at the genetics, no condor on Earth fit the profile of their father. And when they looked even further, they found that 100% of their genetics came from their mothers. These, by the way, are two separate female condors. And basically, because we have all the DNA samples from every living condor, because we're able to DNA match 100% of the DNA from each of these children to their mother birds, we are able to find the only solution. Each of these birds have no father, and they were born through a process called parthenogenesis. This is insanely interesting. We see parthenogenesis in things like insects, small animals, occasionally
the Bible.
Reptiles will occasionally do this. Some fish will occasionally do it. But for birds, the only known birds that we knew to do this were occasionally domestic chickens and domestic turkeys. It was incredibly rare. And in almost all those cases, the eggs wouldn't hatch. They were a non-viable offspring. They would just die. And so the fact that this is happening in like a wild type bird for once, for the non-domesticated bird, for the first time ever, it seemingly happens enough that it could happen twice without us noticing, and that it happened in such a way that led to a fucking bird hatching out of this egg and flying away is fucking crazy and super interesting. Now, you might be thinking, if you know a little genetics, you might be thinking to yourself, how the fuck can a mom, without a dad's input, give birth to a male? That doesn't make any sense. Where do you get the Y chromosome from? Well, the answer to that is that birds have their sex characteristics determined by different chromosomes than we do. So we have X and Y, right? And females are XX and males are XY. That's true with mammals in general. However, other creatures like birds don't have their sex chromosomes as X and Y. Theirs are actually Z and W. And unlike for us, for birds, the heterozygous sex chromosomes, the different ones, are females. So if you're Z and W in birds, you're a female. And the homozygous ones, ZZ, are males. Isn't that crazy?
So the males in birds are more resistant to like genetic disease?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, absolutely.
A lot more, you're more likely to encounter a ladybird hemophiliac than you are.
But what it also means is that if you're a bird born through parthenogenesis like this, you have to be a male because you're only getting one of the chromosomes. And so if you're only getting one, you can only get the Z. And if you only have Z as a bird, you're a male. So super, super interesting. Parthenogenesis, as we kind of understand it, is super interesting. And I've always thought this, like, so this isn't a breeding program. The only reason it was discovered is because of the DNA. How many times has this happened and nobody knew about it? They just assumed it was a regular goddamn condor. Like, how many times has this happened with other animals and we don't know about it because we're not doing DNA tests of 100% of the species?
But we do know that, I mean, with that, though, we know that you could say that you could only believe in a Jesus if he was a woman.
That's
that was
true.
The only way
that's
it
a good
could happen.
Or a bird.
I've been saying Raptor Jesus for a while.
You were saying Rapper Jesus. You know that.
He had fat beats, Bobby.
And some very unhealthy views on women. So here is the Wikipedia article on parthenogenesis. I'll go through real quick. Normal egg cells form in the process of meiosis and are haploid, meaning they have half the genetic information, with half as many chromosomes as their mother's body cells. Haploid individuals, however, are usually non-viable, and parthenogenic offspring usually have diploid chromosome numbers, meaning when you make a gamete, an egg or a sperm, you essentially divide yourself, usually at random, to create half of you, and each one of those halves is a different half because you're dividing in different places, but you create half of you. If you try and have a parthenogenetic thing that's just made from a haploid cell, it won't really be viable. It won't turn into a living organism because it only has half the amount of chromosomes it's supposed to have. However, successful parthenogenetic species basically find a way to go back to being diploid after going haploid. Depending on the mechanism involved in restoring diploid number of chromosomes, parthenogenetic offspring may have anywhere between all and half of the mother's alleles. The offspring having all of the mother's genetic materials are called full clones. Those having only half are called half clones. Full clones are usually formed without meiosis. If meiosis occurs, the offspring will only get a fraction of the mother's alleles since crossing over of DNA takes place during meiosis, creating variation. Now, what's interesting is parthenogenesis occurs in certain species that we know of regularly, as, you know, like we're in a weird mating time, and so all of a sudden I'm going to be able to create an egg myself. But sometimes it's the only way that a species gives birth to the next generation. We've talked about before a specific hybrid species that lives here in the American Southwest called the whiptail lizard, or the Southwest whiptail. Now, this particular whiptail lizard is actually a hybrid species between two different species. So sometime a long ass time ago, I forgot, they did a genetic clock on it. It was many millions. Two individuals from each of these species met together, mated, and then had offspring. These offspring were female, and there was no males for them to mate with. They weren't going to mate with either side. Instead, they were parthenogenetic, meaning they just continued to have babies on their own. Meaning every whiptail lizard you've ever seen is basically a clone, full clone or half clone, of that original hybrid event. And so they don't have males in that whole species. The entire species is females giving birth parthenogenetically.
So even though birds and lizards are closer together, they don't have a, what's it, WZ?
No, I think they are actually two different ones too. But I think they're also the situation where the homozygous is female.
The female is the complete. The male is the variation, is the deviant.
Sure, I guess you could put it that way.
My marriage perfectly represents the metaphor for humanity that I'm going for. I am the deviant.
Now, you might be thinking to yourself, well, fuck, if you could just have a whole species just by reproducing yourself over and over again, why don't all species do that? That seems way easier than mating and all of the energy we use for that, and et cetera, et cetera.
All right, incel.
Well, true. But also the problem is that you then have very little to no genetic diversity, and a single plague could wipe out the entire species. That's why this type of reproduction can occupy a niche really, really fast. But it can also be wiped out incredibly easily. And so sometimes species that are parthenogenetic, unless they're able to kind of, we talked about the different ways of restoring diploid numbers, unless they're able to restore diploid numbers in a way that breeds some diversity through variation, if they're full clones every single time, then that leaves that species at a real big risk of getting wiped out the second one really, really like good virus gets them.
Or natural disaster, or a new species of sexual hunter. Okay, like for example, all of a sudden somebody discovers that a new species comes in is like, like some version of like in the same way that otters hump baby seals. Another mm-hmm. species comes in and says, wow, look at these whiptail lizards.
Yeah.
Very sexy, very yeah. sexy. But with some genetic variation, you might have some ugly ass lizards.
That's true. Yeah, it's true. You know, by the way, they actually have to do like lesbian stuff to have babies. Like they're not actually obviously inseminating the other lizard, but the only way those whiptail lizards can parthenogenetically reproduce is if they do mating activities, like they mount another lizard and do like fake mating with them, another whiptail, then they themselves can be brought to parthenogenetic estrus, so to speak, but otherwise they cannot. So even though they are making the baby completely within their own body, there's no contribution from anything from the outside, they still have to bang to have kids.
I mean, my dog, who is a lady, regularly shows her dominance to my male dog.
Sure.
By just humping him. Maybe this is just something boss-ass lizards do to establish, like, hey, this is my section of the desert. This is my rock. Stay the F off it.
Go boss-ass lizards. All right, thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 585, where you learned all about a new human ancestor, kind of, and how condors can apparently replace themselves without male condors. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 586.
My punishment is to be tied to a rock and have every condor come and eat out my liver and sing John Denver songs to me.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.